Welcome to this edition of When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine, a discussion of sustainable living and what that means to you and me. I'm Jay Warmke.
And I'm Annie Warmke.
And today we're going to talk about getting started in the business of goats, or what to do before you invite those little sociopaths onto your farm. As you can tell, I love goats.
Well, that's why you're all not right. Going to do most of the talking today.
I know. So. And the goats love me, right?
No, they don't.
No, they actually don't, actually. So Annie, tell me, you're the goat farmer. You're the farmer. You're the goat.
A goat herder.
Goat herder?
Yes, I'm the person who herds the goats.
Do goats herd?
They live as a herd. Yes, they do.
Okay. All right. And what's your experience with your herd of goats? So tell me, I mean, I know
you... It's hard to look at you and be serious and talk about goats because everything coming out of your mouth is sociopath. They're bums.
They're hanging
ungrateful
around.
Ungrateful little slobs.
They're smoking cigarettes behind the barn.
And
they're
pooping everywhere.
They're talking about how they can, like, steal my hubcaps. So.
Or supervise you when you're trying to fix something.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. So the thing that really is... super, super important, if you're thinking about going into keeping goats, is that you've got to have a plan. And I know I say that about almost everything we talk about. And that plan has to incorporate a variety of things if you're going to get it right. And it's unfortunate because most people think you just go get the animal, it shows up, everything's cool. So they go to the auction and they don't know anything about goats.
It's like buying a bunny rabbit at Easter, right?
No, it's probably worse than that.
Well, it reminds me, like when I was a kid and you went to the fair and you won a goldfish and they give it to you in a little plastic bag.
Now, where are you going with that?
But I had no bowl. I had no idea how you care for a goldfish.
Yeah, and fish are not the same as a goat either. So this is the challenge. But
they die quicker.
Well, maybe. They need oxygen, and they use up all the oxygen in the bag, then they are going to croak. Mm-hmm. So let me just back up before I go into what's needed for the basics. So this is just part one of a series that we're going to do, and so I don't want to get too far ahead of myself. But I got into the business of goats because I went to a workshop put on by the Ohio Food and Farm the Ohio Education Food and Farm Association, and they had a person there from the Weston A. Price Foundation. And Weston A. Price was a dentist in the 30s who began to believe that health, the reason people didn't have healthy teeth and didn't have health is because they didn't eat the right foods. And so he went around the world and he looked at different cultures that didn't have a major highway. So they weren't bringing in white sugar or white flour or any of those kinds of things, which is pretty forward thinking 1930s. And what he found was that people had sacred foods that women ate when they were pregnant. They didn't eat food that was bad for them. They ate a balanced diet in terms of what their culture was about. And they had health, and they did not have food decay, teeth decay, and they did not brush their teeth. So he gathered pictures, and he took pictures of faces and all that stuff. And then he came back a number of years later, and the highways had come, and he took photos again, and people were riddled with tooth decay. The jaw was much more narrow than it had been, and there were a lot of other things.
And he concluded that highways caused tooth decay.
No, that right? Highways brought things that destroyed cultural norms.
Okay, so how is this getting us
okay,
to goats?
So this got us to goats because one of the things that he determined was the value of raw milk. And so I was sitting there hearing all this, and it was very fascinating to me because I love that whole bit. And I thought, well, this is something I could do for my family. So I set out to find raw milk, which I could have bought an Uzi better than I could buy the raw milk. And so I ended up driving 1 hour one way to the middle of nowhere to buy raw milk from a woman who you would not have eaten in her kitchen, but the milk was well taken care of. And then eventually I bought a goat, Eleanor Rigby, and she had two kids. And that was the beginning of my herd And so I was nervous, you know, I didn't know how to trim hooves. I do remember milking a goat once, not once, but in high school, but I was nervous. It's kind of like the first you're going to have a baby and you can't remember how to give it a bath kind of thing. But I wasn't prepared. I know we were not prepared. I was just thinking I'll get it right because I'm really smart about animals and I'll figure it out. And I did read a couple of books, but still. So anyway, so that's been 15 years ago. And over the last 15 years, I have learned a lot, obviously. I've written a couple of books about goat, natural goat care and the business of goats. And I have spent a lot of time, I teach goat college at Blue Rock Station, doing a lot of things with people, helping them with goat health. And so I've learned a lot. And the one great thing about goats, in spite of your opinion of them, is that every day they provide some mystery, something fascinating, something interesting. And so me as a person who's easily bored finds them really great to be with. And they're great animal as far as for women, because you can make them do what you want them to do and they can step on your foot and it's not going to break your ankle.
Well, the one thing I know that they're good at is letting you know any weaknesses in your fencing. So
they're good at showing you a lot of things, and that's some of their value and some of their irritating behavior.
Well, if you were thinking about getting into raising goats, I know you're now a resident expert with your goats. But if you're out there thinking about getting into goats, what would be the first thing that you would do? What would be your first
step? The very first thing, the very, very first thing you need to do is to know what that land has been used for. So if there's any kind of brown field or poisoning or anything like that, you're going to be in trouble.
Because they're very, very susceptible to whatever might be.
Well, any animal.
Any residual.
Even you. So
Even
you,
me.
No, well, as a human being.
So if I ate the grass, probably so.
Maybe not. It might be even just the spraying. But here's the thing. You want to do a soil test, and because you want to know what that soil is going to tell you about that land. And I recommend using a group out of Michigan called Crop Services. And the reason I do is because I did use OSU Extension, and they had me send my samples to Pennsylvania, and the stuff that came back was not comprehensive enough to show me trace minerals and the things that really make a difference with the health of the soil and the plants, and then how the animal benefits from that health. So Crop Services is going to do you proud. You pay them one fee. They advise you. They don't charge more for that. And then they're going to tell you what needs to be sprayed or what needs to be used on that and what needs to be, what seeds need to be sown to expand the plant varieties there and plants that are going to help you with parasite control. And they're going to tell you how to up the microbes in the soil, which is going to help control parasites and help the plants to grow and really flourish. And without that, you are just, it's just hit or miss. And you may think you've got a really great pasture, and you test that soil, and it's really devoid of any kind of health for the animal.
Okay, so step number one, figure out your pasture, well, and treat it and make it healthy. But
right.
But as we're driving to beautiful downtown Athens, Ohio today, we went by some people who had goats, some people who had llamas, and these animals were kept in conditions where I don't care how healthy the soil had been, it was not healthy now. I mean, how much space does one of these animals need? Because these guys were eating down to the nubbins.
They were in the dirt. Well, so that's exactly the opposite of where we need to be. And space requirements are something totally different. And so each livestock animal has different space requirements. And you can look up online at the ASPCA, and they have humane guidelines, and for each animal, so even bison, I don't know, guinea pigs, whatever you're raising, you can see what's the space requirement, what's
I always get those two confused, bison.
Well, we really ought to be raising guinea pigs. They're a lot better on
the
land.
Let's see if we could crossbreed them.
Okay, uh-huh. Mr. Serious. So in order to know what those space requirements are.
Well, but with your goats, I mean, I don't know what they say is obviously the richness of the land is going to impact that. But if you had an ideal situation, how many goats per acre or how many acres per goat would you look for?
So that's not the question I would ask. The question I want to ask is how, so first of all, I need to have a fence that is able to create a barrier for that animal so it cannot hurt itself. So it can't get out, it can't get its head stuck, whatever that's going to be. So that's the next step after you do the testing. But then I also need to be able to move those animals to different paddocks. So I need to create pretty small paddocks so that when they're eating that pasture, they're only eating down to maybe about 12 to 18 inches into the plant. So that plant's always going to stay at 12 to 18 inches because the lower that plant is eaten, the longer it takes to recover.
So when you remove a goat from a pasture, it's going to still look pretty lush.
It should.
You know, unlike like cattle or whatever, where they tend to graze it down pretty low.
And they shouldn't either. Although cows and steers after they're two don't get parasites. So that's why they can live that way.
After they're two in America don't live very long.
No, well, but that's a whole different thing. But so what we're talking about is not to let the animal eat down where the parasites live, and they only live on grass blades.
So it's really not the size of the pasture. It's more how you run the animals within the pasture.
Yes.
So you would recommend creating smaller subsections of a pasture, letting them graze within that subsection for a brief period of time,
right.
A week,
maybe, no,
two
it
weeks,
might be depending
a day.
What you want to have is small enough pasture paddocks so that they're going to eat everything and they won't just concentrate on one area. And if they're only eating on one area, then you make the paddock smaller. So you want to be able to move that animal as soon as that paddock gets down to that lowest point that you've decided.
And then you let it rest for a period of time.
6 to 8 weeks. So
you'd need a lot. So if you're leaving them on there for a week, you'd need six of these at least.
Yeah, yeah. And what you're doing is letting the plant rejuvenate itself. You're also getting past the parasite cycle, so the eggs that are laid have nowhere to go but to die. So that answers the question about how many, because you could have quite a number of goats, but you could just keep moving and moving and moving them. But that depends on what you want that animal for.
So it's a pretty intensive fencing project before the first animal gets brought to the farm.
Yes, it is.
So you'd really have to know what you're doing, which most people don't. I mean, we've met a lot of folks who come to Blue Rock Station and they say, oh, yeah, yeah, I want to get a goat. And their whole idea is I'll just tie them up in the backyard, put them on a rope.
A block.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like a concrete block. And yeah, I can tell from our goats that would work real well.
Well, they also think they're lawnmowers. And really, a goat does not want to eat pasture. They want to eat fibrous things. They need that for their rumen to be healthy. They have four compartments in their stomach, and that requires roughage. So, and everything about their system is set up to deal with things like floribunda rose and honeysuckle and bark and any kind of bramble. So that's where the health is for them.
Okay, well, you are listening to When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine with Jay and Annie Warmke. Reminding you, once again, it is the end of the world as we know it, and
thank God.
Thank God. It's the end of the world. And here come the goats. So we're talking about goats, and we're talking about how to get into business with goats. And we've already established that there's a lot of preparation work that goes into raising goats before you ever get the first goat, right? So you've got to have bulletproof pastures, fencing, establish a series of smaller paddocks. You've got to make sure that the soil is healthy. So you do an evaluation of the soil.
More plant variety.
Watering, I assume, the rain. Rain helps.
Well, they have to have clean water and clean feed, or
they
won't eat it.
Yeah, they are pretty fussy. I mean, there's this like stereotype: goats will eat tin cans, goats will eat anything, and they really don't. I mean, these guys are the finicky eaters of the animal kingdom, right?
Yeah. So I think the next step. And perhaps this is the first step, but I don't think it is. I think you create these pasture paddocks, you understand the soil and the health of the pasture plants, and then I think you've got to go to goat college, wherever that is, because no matter how much you study and read, no matter how many YouTube videos you look at, you need to go where people can help you to put hands on and learn about natural care, because one of the situations that we have in this country is that most people that go to veterinary school are not trained in the world of goats. In fact, goats are not researched hardly at all in this country. And so the normal vet does not know or understand that goat.
Which is strange, since goats are one of the oldest and most domesticated animal. But I guess that's in countries where veterinarians don't practice.
Perhaps. So it comes back to a lot of things that we talk about, and that is that if I'm going to be knowledgeable about this, I'm going to do a better job of it. And that's not to say the vet does not have a position in this. They do, because they know about good drugs.
And for animals as well.
Yeah, sometimes I need it too. And they certainly understand the anatomy, but they don't understand the scenarios of how goats live and work and play and get sick. So I feel like if you go someplace where somebody's going to teach you how to trim those hoofs, going to teach you the psychology of those animals, because that is going to help you more than anything to help them stay healthy and do well. And also teaches you some basic natural remedies for how to help that animal to overcome a lot of common things that happen to goats, then you're going to be a more confident person setting out into the world of goat herding. And this is before you ever think about making money.
Because is there such a thing as making money from goats?
I think there is a possibility to make money, but it cannot be your living.
Right. Well, I know there's a lot of investment in the animal, and not in the animal per se, but in the facilities to keep the animal. As we've talked about, the fencing is a big investment. Shelter for the animal is a big investment, because goats don't like the rain.
They have to have shelter, and it's only inhumane not to provide it.
And what you've started doing with the little platforms, so they can sleep up off the ground, to keep them away from parasites, to keep them away, keep them comfortable, keep them warm. You know, electric blankets are expensive for goats, right?
They'll just chew them.
The goat jacuzzi, you know, that's another thing you've got to invest in. So when I think about observing how our animals are kept, there's a lot of infrastructure that goes into that. And then there's a lot of time, labor that you put in. So the animal themselves is the least of the investment. You know, I think most people think when they're raising livestock, okay, well, I'm going to go out and I'm going to buy a goat, and it might be $100 or $200 or whatever.
That would be a
drop in the bucket,
one,
right? Yeah. It's the infrastructure and the time. So if you're going to invest this kind of time, you want to keep that goat alive and healthy. So you were just touching on some of the things about health, but a lot of the farmers we've talked about, I just remember one guy saying, you know, well, that goat was just looking for a place to die. And I was thinking,
well, he was feeding him bread.
I know. I mean, your animal husbandry was almost making that inevitable.
Not mine, his.
Not his, yeah. His, yeah.
I never fed bread.
No, so I think that's something, before somebody gets involved in this, they better be prepared for the investment in time and infrastructure.
Well, and it can be done gradually. I mean, you can start out with two goats. And like, I just did a consulting visit yesterday with a family that it has bought a farm, and they want to have livestock and they want to have goats. And so one of the things that we talked about was starting out with some wethers, and wethers are goats that have been castrated. So next spring they could come and buy three or four males that have been castrated, and then they have an acre of pasture, and they can spend the warm months getting used to how these goats live and work together, and so they will only have had to create enough pasture fencing for that 1 acre, and they don't have to have paddocks because it's wooded, and so it's a very natural environment. But so then if they make mistakes, those wethers are going to be a lot more expendable, and I hate to say it that way, but I don't like it when people buy milk goats from me and they take them and they don't take care of them, and you know, they end up dying.
Well, the milk goats are a whole nother area of care. You've got to deal with the milking, and some people just simply don't have a lifestyle that allows them to milk in the morning and in the evening.
But that doesn't stop people, and that's the point. Yeah. So if we start out really small and we say, look, we want to try this, let's start with some weathers. Let's see how you interact with them. Let's see how you learn the psychology of how all of that works with health and their personality, and then move on from there. That way, there is a very small investment compared to what they need to do in order to have healthy goats. And again, people will say to me, well, what kind of goat should I have? What's the best goat? And I say, the one you like the looks of. Because if you like the looks of that animal, whether she's an Alpine or a Seinen or a Toggenburg, whatever she is, you're going to give her the benefit of the doubt when something's wrong versus a goat that is driving you crazy and it's not handsome or pretty to you. So I feel pretty strongly about that. I've seen people interact that way with kids. I see people interact that way with their dogs. And so let's like the looks of the animal.
When you say kids, with their children?
No, I mean their children. Yes. Yes, I do. And then what do we want that animal to do to make us money? So I don't want to really get into that except to say it's one of two things. Either they're going to be meat animals or they're going to be milk animals. And so the other thing is that you may decide, I just want to buy some weathers and I'm going to have them clear the understory of my forest. Okay, that's a job right there. That's something you could do to make a living. But that's another part in this series that we're going to talk about. One thing I want to say, is that there is money out there for grants from different groups. Some of the groups that focus on animal husbandry, animal rights, humane treatment, do offer grants for things like fencing and water. And because water is a big deal, it's got to be clean, as we mentioned, and there's got to be easy access, or you as the farmer are going to get a lot of exercise carrying it and run out of water. You know, when the animal runs out of water, she can't digest her food. So you don't want that to happen.
And the water thing is a little bit more complicated than I would have guessed, because I never would have imagined, you know, if you just hang a bucket of clean water out, it's not going to remain clean very long with a goat.
Well, they're eating hay and they decide they need a drink, so they drop some hay in there and then that rots.
Right, or they love to back up to it and poop in the water bucket.
Well, if it's down low enough. So when they're babies, we have to have the buckets lower. But then also they can't have frozen water, so in the winter you've got to have heated water buckets and you've got to keep water in there so that they have water, and they're very thirsty in the summer when it's too hot and very thirsty in the winter when it's too cold.
And I know we tried to teach them those little water nipple things that the pigs seem to figure out right away, but the goats never did. So there's no tray of water. It's just they would get water on demand, but the goats just found that very offensive. And
they don't want to touch that after the other goat has touched that with their mouth, because
I wouldn't want to either.
It's contaminated. they won't eat. So if a goat takes a bite of a leaf and doesn't take it, or even licks it or touches it with some part of their body, they won't take that either. They'll leave it. Mm-hmm. So one thing we have had good luck with is a project we're working on to use goat manure to heat water in the wintertime. And we taught them how to access the buckets that the water will be in and has a flap on it. So we made these prototypes with cardboard and showed them how to use them. And goats are very, very intelligent. And right away, they understood. Only the buck and the llama could not figure it out. And finally, the buck figured it out by watching all the girls do it. But they got it right away.
That's how I figured out most things. Watching the girls. At least that's what I claimed to be doing at the time. I was doing research. And speaking of research and getting an education, where would you get an education? Where would you find out all this? Because there's a lot of stuff that you're mentioning here that you need to know.
Well, there are lots and lots of books out there. And I would say start with a book that isn't very deep. doesn't go into a lot of deep detail.
Most of the books I read aren't very deep.
Well, I know, but that's a whole different category of book. Carrie Starr from Cherokee Valley Bison Ranch and I are getting ready to release a book called The Business of Goat Herding. And we just try to talk on a lot of different topics like marketing and raising money, I'll say it that way, crowdsourcing, and how to brand your products and all that kind of stuff. So we're going to talk, we talk about that. We talk about fencing and a couple of things about parasites. And so we're just touching on things. And I think this is really the kind of book that I needed when I first started out because I didn't know what all this stuff meant. But when it's simple and it's just touching on it, then you can go online and the big library in the sky on the internet, and you can look up anything. Another book that I like is, I can't remember the title of it, but it's my go-to Bible, really. And it's all about herbal medicinal herbs and how to use them to heal and work on a lot of different problems with goats. And I do have a lot of goat books, but the ones that I really focus on are ones that are pretty simple. And I don't really want to know everything. I just want to understand what I need to do when there's an issue.
And you do you teach a goat college.
I do Blue Rock Station Goat College, which is actually this weekend. We hold it.
Hopefully you're listening to this before. Otherwise it was last weekend. And
that's
too
right.
Bad.
Or a year ago or something. But we do go to college a couple times a year, once in the spring, once in the fall. And the goal of that is just to give people a little of this and a little of that, but also the opportunity to connect with those animals so they understand, is this something I really want to do? I remember this guy said to me, they already had goats. And he said, you wash the buckets out every time you feed? And it's like, yeah. And he said, well, that's too much work. Well, okay, it's not too much work if it helps them to stay healthy. And we can talk about that more next time in the next part of the series. But the reality is goats are amazing creatures, and they provide a variety of products that have the ability to generate income. And we'll talk about that next time as well.
Okay, so any final thought real quick before we finish up here?
Well, just to say, don't let Jay Warmke ever manage your herd, because one time I had to go to France, and when I came back, the buck was with one of the young doelings, and he said, well, I didn't know that it wasn't a boy, and I had to teach him anatomy that day.
I don't even know how to respond to that.
Thank you. I'm glad.
Other than to say, you've been listening to When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine with Jay and Annie Warmke. Thank you very much for spending just a little bit of time with us and not bringing your goat with you. And as your grandmother hopefully said to you, the secret to a happy and sustainable life is...
play nice with others, learn anatomy in school, clean up your own mess, and eat your vegetables, Jay Warmke.
All right, I will. Until next time, bye-bye.
Mother Earth will sing, and her children will be healed. Come out, see the morning glory, blossom in the night. Know the skies are dancing.
You can find more information on living sustainably in our unsustainable world at BlueRockStation.com.